The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. And Navy Federal Credit Union, they don't just serve the Navy, they serve the Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, Coast Guard, and even Space Force. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Thank you guys so much for always tuning in every single week, listening to it, watching it, and most importantly, we appreciate every single one of you guys who have subscribed. If you haven't already, you need to check us out on YouTube because we're dropping new videos every single week. We drop full episodes and short mini clips as well to help you get that quick never quit advice you need. We've got like 83,000 plus subscribers on YouTube. We want to get that up to 100,000, so if you want to be a part of that, please check us out. Team Never Quits on YouTube. We're doing new stuff every single week. It's super fun. We've got a great guest in store for you guys today. Mandy Harvey is an award-winning singer, songwriter, and motivational speaker who lost her residual hearing at the age of 19. In addition to performing and speaking, Mandy has become an ambassador for No Barriers USA with a mission to encourage, inspire, and assist others to break through their personal barriers. Welcome to the show, Mandy.
It is so good to hear your voice. I mean, truth be told, I never thought I'd ever get a chance to talk to you.
Why?
Well, I don't know. The first time I ever saw you was a while ago and heard you. I come from the toughest family on earth. And there's some things that just kind of stop us in our tracks. You're one of them.
Oh, well, you know, I've been making men cry since 1988.
Oh, here we go. Now she's going to lay it on thick, huh? I have no doubt. That's a, you know what? When you speak truth, that's just kind of the way it is.
No.
This is my wife, Melanie.
Hi.
Hi.
It's nice to meet you virtually. Hello. And you guys can hear me okay? Is my audio all right?
Yes, ma'am, we can.
Awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce. First time I ever heard that was a commercial with two sisters were talking. And they didn't know that they were talking to each other. But one of them said
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It's just like, wait,
like
only my sister.
Some kind of insurance. She's like, awesome sauce. She's like Angela, like, you know?
Only my sister says that.
Whatever that is. They're like twins or something.
Yeah, they're twins.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus is a twin. Yeah.
That's super cool.
It is. Hey, where are you calling from?
Tampa. Well, Riverview, technically, but Florida, Tampa Bay area.
Oh, we were just there in Tampa.
Oh, it's beautiful right now.
It was beautiful when we were there. It was right at, I got to do one of those powerboat races out in the bay.
Oh,
with,
nice.
It was. Yeah, we had a blast. It was the Nitro Circus crew and the Monster Energy guys, and it was for, it was fun. I love Tampa. I did my hospital rotations down there.
Oh, okay.
And some of my buddies worked at St. Pete. I worked at Bayfront Hospital. So I spent a lot of time down there throughout my entire life in Florida, Tampa, and mostly Pensacola. But we definitely do a lot of our training down there in Tampa. It's a beautiful place. I love it.
Yeah, I've got my cousin Jordan just started working in PEDS or the ICU.
Uh-huh.
As a nurse there in, I think, St. Jude down in St. Pete.
First of all, congratulations on being Super Bowl champions.
Thank you.
Y'all snatched Tom Brady up and, you know, you got the GOAT down there. And
I know the GOAT. I don't know. I think it's one of those things, though. It's really nice to see an actual, like, team come together, because even if you have somebody like Tom Brady, if the whole team isn't working together, then it really doesn't matter.
Right. That 100% absolute. And if you have somebody like Tom, when he rolls in, that's how you can tell that he whatever environment he rolls into, he kind of meshes into that. I would imagine in his head, I've met him a few times, And over time and everything he's accomplished, you'd think that this would have, if it wasn't the case, it would have already come out. But like, I truly think he just cares about the team, and he goes in there and makes everyone feel just as important as he does.
Yeah. Well, it's a really beautiful way to get, you know, people to actually want to be on board. And, you know, you can't really have a team if you're trying to tell everybody they're not good enough.
Right. That's how you get good as a team. You work together.
Mm-hmm.
Your voice is one thing. Absolutely. When you started telling how you sing and how you play, when you come from something like, I was never special either. It was hard growing up. So when you recognize somebody who has to go through adversity and how well they adapt to it, to where it's not an adversity, it's just the way this one is, because we're all unique, right?
Yeah.
I always, when someone told me I had a disability, I was like, well, it was a distinct ability. I just had to learn how to train it. And then as you're going through life, your willingness to keep stepping into that was just mind blowing. So, I literally can't wait to hear the tale.
Hear your story.
Absolutely. Are we already allowed to talk about it?
We're going. This is how it is. It's just like this.
Right.
We're just chilling.
I didn't know if I could get it.
This is how it is. We're just hanging out, asking questions, getting to know each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's a very interesting way of wording it, I guess, you know, because you have this mindset of people who have abilities versus disabilities. And I really do feel like that's just a lack of education, because every single person has different barriers that they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And the way that you go about your life and overcome your obstacles are going to be vastly different from mine. And I think that it gives us a beautiful opportunity to learn from each other, because your viewpoint and your perspective is going to be so tailored towards you, but it'll give me maybe thoughts and ideas that I would not have created on my own. And so people come up to me all the time. They're just like, I'm just mind blown that you've, you know, kind of overcome your deafness. And I have to kind of remind them, I'm just like, I didn't overcome anything. I am deaf. That's part of me. I just, in a roundabout way, just continued doing music differently. It just took me a little bit of time to figure it out.
Do you help other people with deafness or any other disabilities on how to learn? Like, can you teach others? And have you
how
done
to feel
that?
Music?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think anybody can feel music. Everybody feels music first. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a vibration that hits you and then it transmits information into your brain and you're like, oh, that's what C is. But being able to harness, I guess, the entirety of what I'm doing is tailored to me. And so I've taught classes and I've done calls and kind of shown people the steps of what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis using visual tuners and feeling the vibrations as I'm creating the sounds, as I'm watching the sounds, and then kind of marking them off on my throat to almost like be able to play my throat like an instrument. But that, again, you know, that's my system works for me. If you don't know anything about music theory, I think that would be a very challenging task to ask of you. But the mother of all invention is being innovative.
So I'm sorry, I'm fascinated with this whole thing. Because when I'm growing up, you hear about Beethoven when he went deaf, and then he would lean his head on the piano and play the tunes, because everything is a vibration. Our voices, there are birds down here that have more vocal tones than we can even imagine. So all a spoken word is inflections in a bark that we understand.
Yeah.
Correct?
Correct.
When people are like, oh, you're deaf. First of all, I would have never guessed that. Mm-hmm. And I know it. I mean, you articulate the tone, the way you.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. I mean,
I work very hard at that.
Okay, I get that. I can understand that. I know what it's like. I work real hard. I never get good at anything. But when you feel called to do something, it's funny. It's not it's like when you say you're deaf, like, no, your other senses were heightened when they pulled one down. Because if I'm not mistaken, you lost your hearing at 18, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was 18 when I lost my hearing, but I've been struggling with my hearing since I was born, you know? So I've been lip reading since I was an infant. That was always just kind of part of my life, but I was always hard of hearing with chunks of time where my eardrums would stop vibrating or ear infections or surgeries or what have you. So my entire upbringing was geared towards kind of developing techniques to blend in. You know, I think when you're in middle school and high school specifically, you do anything that you can do to just be a part of the flow instead of being the one odd duck. And I was always kind of stuck in a position of being constantly reminded that I was the weird one or I was the broken one of the class. And so I worked especially hard to just hide, become invisible in the sea of everybody else. And in addition to that, you know, I think a beautiful testament to my work ethic, you know, I work very hard. I work very hard to sound this clear. You know, talking is a very laborious task. You have to actively think of how you're pronouncing each and every syllable. You have to pay attention to the tongue placement against your teeth. You have to pay attention to how much you're lifting the palate and pushing air forward. It's a lot of work. And people say all the time, it's like, oh, you sound just like a normal person. I was like, well, what does that even mean? But, you know, I guess I thank you. You know, I mean, I work really, really hard for your benefit because it certainly doesn't change my day how muddy I sound.
So does that over time, the way that you learned how to inflect your voice and because that had to change, obviously, right? One tone had to outfeed. And to keep those equal. So when they're pulling your sound from you, and it's kind of like working the controls on the soundboard,
yeah,
right? One goes down while one goes up. So you had to balance those together. Is that why you can hit those notes that very few people can? And what I mean by that is I've been waiting a long time to pay you this compliment.
Aww.
When we were watching, started playing, like you would, I was so enthralled with just your story. I hadn't even heard you sing, but then you started playing. And then I remember when they shifted over to the judges and what was the lady's name? That pretty lady, when her jaw hit like the ground like that, mine did too. And every time I hear, and normally when you listen to a song over and over again, cause it made you happy.
Yeah.
It you know, you kind of get used to it, but then there are certain notes that you can hit that I guess I don't ever hear them normally. Mm-hmm. Cause it makes this tingle in my spine. I'm like, it stops me dead in my tracks. So I'll listen. And I don't know if anybody's told you that, but I wanted to compliment you on that because there's some times when you're singing and there's these notes that you hit that just, I didn't care what was going on. I would stop and listen.
Well, thank you. I actually, if you're talking about or referencing maybe Try, there's funny things of how I wrote that song, and it's based off of how it felt. I write a lot of music based how it feels instead of what I think it sounds like. So like sometimes I'll write specific notes that like tickle behind my eye or like bother my face so that I know that I'm right. You know, I put in kind of these like tricks and little messages to myself to remind myself that I have the right notes. But there's an incredible freedom with not being able to hear yourself sing while you're singing because you lose the ability to be afraid. You lose the ability to judge yourself completely. So it's like, what's the worst that can happen at this point? You know, my biggest fear growing up was losing my hearing, and it happened. So what can you take from me at this point? I sing the wrong note. Who cares? I'm here. I'm working hard. And all I can say and all I have control over is my work ethic and how much energy and time I've put into preparation. Because once I stand on that stage, I'm feeling the floor and I'm just opening my mouth and letting go. And then however it comes out, it comes out. I know that I've put in the work and I've tried my hardest and my heart is in the right place. The rest of it is arbitrary.
Well, speaking of your story, we watched, you know, the America's Got Talent, and we only heard like one sentence of your story. We would love to hear you tell your full story if you're okay with sure. that.
Yeah, I fell in love with music when I was four. I was always a hard of hearing kid. And my mom put me in a choir class at church, I think to buy time. I think she was busy and she just kind of like stuck me in this room for free daycare for a moment. And everybody in the room was older than me, but they handed me the sheet music anyway so that I could quasi follow along because I don't think they knew what else to do with me. And it was the first time that I actually could see the words that they were going to sing as they were singing them. And I felt like I was a part of the conversation for the first time. You know, being hard of hearing, the most precious gift that you can have is communication. And unfortunately, in a world full of people who are not thoughtful of it, it's the one thing that I struggle with on a day-to-day basis. And so being in a room full of people who I actually knew what they were talking about, it really just lit me up and made me just excited. I've always kind of connected with music, but that was the first time that I felt overwhelmed by it. And I understood the power of not just the music, but truly community. That was what I was chasing when I went to school for music education. It wasn't to become a performer. I wanted to become a music educator. I wanted to give people the ability to have that feeling where they were a part of something. They were a part of a team. They were a part of making something beautiful and allowing them to be a part of the conversation. And so my aspirations to become a music teacher was everything. And then I went to school for vocal music education. During my senior year, I started having a lot of surgeries. And during my freshman year of college, I continued having a lot of surgeries because I was born with EDS. It's a connective tissue disorder, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And so I have very poor ligaments and nerves and really any of that stuff. I break and fall apart. And I fell apart. And my body had adverse reactions to the medications for surgeries, and my body kind of fought itself and lost, I guess. And for the life of me, I can't seem to explain how joyful I am now versus how broken I was before. You know, I think that we find ourselves fascinated by this idea that I lost everything, and how sad it must be that I sing the way that I sing, but I can't enjoy the music that I make. But in reality, I'm living my life, and this is a moment that happened, and this is part of my story, part of who I am. And I have found more love, more compassion, more of an identity, and more acceptance of myself having gone through all this hardship than I ever would have if I had not. So I'm thrilled to be able to work hard and wake up in the morning. I'm thrilled to be who I am.
Is that a routine? I mean, most of us, when you hear people who have to get up and do the grind every day, it's a routine. In our life, it's our life. Like I get up, if I'm doing something in my routine, that means I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, some of it's routine. Some of it's need. Having EDS, it's changed things. You know, it can be very frustrating from time to time. You wake up, you never know what body part's going to fall and how you're going to break that day or what the struggles are going to look like. But there are certain changes that have been made out of necessity that have changed my headspace. You know, if I don't work out and I don't physically push myself on a daily basis, I lose complete circulation in my body and I deteriorate. And as far as dying young seems to be something I would love to avoid, it is a necessity for my life to do this for survival. So, you know, if I look at it this way, if I don't work out my muscles
vocally, I'll lose it. And if I lose it, I don't know if I'll get it back. So it's a necessity for me, just as much as it is a joy. But my motivation is different than a lot of people who just get up in the morning and sing because they want to. I sing because I need to. And if I stop singing, I'm afraid that I won't be able to find it again.
I completely understand that. Now I want you to look at it like this. You ready?
Yep. Bring it on.
The minute you roll in here, on your back, we're all butt naked, crying, can't even defend ourselves. You come in here to die. Mm-hmm. You're learning how to live while we're dying. Mm-hmm. It's a thing.
Yeah.
And we don't even have any idea when we're checking out. You get one day down here. One. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow, we don't know if we're going to see it. So right. As you push through it, I was trying to explain to myself why it is some of us have to go through things and others don't. And it's as we go through life, we're a blobbering mess in the beginning. But then life is designed to sharpen us into a blade. In my world, that's the way I have to look at it. And each person in our life is a stone. They're going to sharpen you, dull you, or polish you out. And when you see the blade on the mill, and there's sparks flying, and I mean, there's it making all kinds of crazy noise, the blade's probably thinking, man, what are you doing to me? But in reality, you're just getting sharpened.
Yeah.
And every time we have to go through something and you think that you're getting broken, you're actually getting broken through. One right. shell has to lead to the other. And a progression of one thing to the other to make sure that you don't skip a step in sharpening the blade. Right. I'll give you this one too. As you lost your hearing and you think that you can't understand. I mean, to understand what it's like to not be able to hear everything around you, you finally heard your voice. And you said right. that tingle behind your eyes, if you know that that's mm-hmm. what how it's supposed to be, right? That's kind of where I feel it when you hit some of those notes.
Yeah.
And if you ever wondered what it was like in the audience, when you open your mouth, it's probably the same deafness that you have in your head.
Yeah.
And all we can hear are those tones coming out of your mouth. No one speaks when you start singing. That's what I noticed. I know that because I shut up. And I don't do that very much, especially in my house. So that in itself, when you as you lose one thing, and you can always look at it like that, or it was ours never to begin with.
Yeah.
Every little hard detail about your life was designed to break something open. That's the only way we get tough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree. I'd like to challenge your thought for just a second, if it's okay.
Give it to me. Come on.
All right. The phrase, why some people struggle and some people don't. Everybody struggles, just looks different. I think some people are broken on an obvious scale, and some people have mass brokenness in an invisible situation. Every single person understands pain. Every single person understands disappointment and failure. Not every single person gets the opportunity to understand joy or feel love. So I feel like while we do have this beautiful gift that we have right in this moment, we don't know what's going to happen the rest of the day. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We also have a firm responsibility to be compassionate to people because we have no idea what's going on in their life. And I don't think that we all need to understand everything. I think that your journey that's making you tougher, making you stronger, making you a better person only is true if you allow that to be the case. With every struggle that you have two choices. You can allow one to let it beat you, or you can learn from it, get up off the floor, try again, and grow in the process.
Absolutely 100% agree with that. And as we go through these cycles of life, the one when they're like, hey, man, I had a setback, or you just had a set up.
Yeah.
And as we go through it, if you hit the bad side, and don't look at it as bad, look at it as like hard. Every emotion that you're born with has to be trained throughout life. If you want to experience joy, you're going to have to experience the other side of that. To experience pure joy and overwhelming joy, you'd have to go through some hard times. You can't base that off anybody else's life. That's why each life sharpens its own. One yeah. has to feed the other. So the minute you look at one thing as a bad thing, as it's hammering me down, like, no, I'm just back on the mill so I can appreciate what I got coming on the other side. And every yeah. time we step into something new, you know it's new and it's a blessing because it's hard. If it was easy, if the plan was already, like if when we read the plan and every little detail was on there, then we wouldn't even do it because it was already be written out. What yeah. fun is that?
But sometimes the difference is time. You know, like I guarantee you, if you had talked to Mandy back in March of 2007, after being dropped from the music program, after being completely devastated and then entering into another surgery, figuring out how to walk again in the midst of all of this other crap that was going on. The one thing that I would have been upset with is if you said, don't worry, you're growing through this, you know, like
right?
in that moment,
right?
In that moment, I needed to be a person in mourning. Correct. I needed to be able to be sad. I needed to be able to process on my own time so that I had the ability to realize that I was at the bottom of a well needing to claw my way out of it. I didn't even know that I had landed yet. Because every time I thought I hit the bottom, you know, I start trying to work up towards, and then guess what? Found out that I was actually towards the top already. And I had a whole other football field to fall back down onto, you know, it just kept getting worse. But there's a beautiful thought in it of knowing that there's a lot of people sitting at the bottom of that well, and we're definitely not alone. We're not alone in anything that we do. And we have the ability to cheer each other on. We have the ability to remind each other, even if it's just by being there silent, you know, maybe that's what that person needs to help them get to a point where they know that they're being milled or become stronger or I don't know, forged. I don't know all of your knife terminology, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
some that's an active participation that has to be there. You know, you can't just have somebody just tell you, oh, life's going to get better, kid. Because people told me that till they were blue in the face, but all I wanted to do was punch them in the throat. So right. I needed time.
Is your family super supportive? Who's your support system?
Oh, yeah. I'm beyond blessed that I have people in my life who have cheered me on and lended me hope when I gave up on myself and ran out, you know. I think... on the grand scheme of life, I have far more support than most people do. And it's one of the reasons why I talk about what I talk about. And I am the person that I am because I want people to realize that I want to give back. I want to give back the encouragement that was given to me that helped me pull through the change that was happening in my life. And the change that will happen again in the future. I'm sure there's many more walls that I'm going to smack into between now and the end of my life. And thankful that I have people holding my hand every step along the way.
Was there a memorable experience that kind of pushed you to that next stage?
It's a series of memorable experiences. You know, I'm a very stubborn person, and it's hard for me. See, I guess, I don't know, maybe it's really hard for me to learn, but I seem to need to get like smacked in the face more than once before I really start figuring things out. But it's a series of things. I really don't believe that there was one eureka moment that made me feel not depressed anymore. It was a collection of moments, a collection of people being there, even when I told them I didn't want them to be, they were still there. People who encouraged and loved me, even when I was nothing but hateful. You know, I had moments where people pushed me to do things that were far outside of my comfort zone that led to a completely different career path. My dad encouraged me to pick up a guitar again and play guitar with him, not because he thought that it would get me back into music, but because he missed playing guitar with his daughter. You know, that was a moment that changed my headspace to say that music can be done differently, you know, feeling the music through my fingertips as we were playing guitar together, as I was pissed off that I was there in the first place and had no reason to be stuck in this horrible situation other than the fact that I love my dad and I respect him. So I said, yes. And, you know, that led to me figuring some stuff out. And then singing in front of a vocal coach, who was a friend of mine, that led to me to singing at a jazz club. When I was a kid, I used to be the most awkward, afraid of people, socially disconnected person that I knew. You know, I would vomit on people if I had to talk to them in person, you know, like I passed out. I would damn near wet myself, you know, having to sing in front of others. And she's asking me to sing at a jazz club. You know, I sang at a jazz club on a random Thursday, and there were like three people there eating dinner, not paying any attention. And it was the most traumatizing, scary moment of my life, but it was also the most significant performance I ever gave. And I sang one song and almost died during it. And then people asked me to come back. And then I was pushed to make an album. And then I was pushed to tour. And then I was pushed to do all these things that they were never my idea. I just wanted to be there for people and kept saying yes.
What does that say about you? I mean, I can't even imagine how tough it would be growing up to as you're losing your hearing. Cause I remember every time I would get my ass whipped, my father would be like, "What, you don't hear so well?" And and the reason they say that is because the tones, like a lot of times when you're trying to deal with somebody, if you can't, I can only imagine how you had to learn to read the body types. So I was trained to read body language and reconnaissance. So I can only imagine how well you do it, right? Because to pick up the tones now, that's probably a little hidden gift you got that is very, very sharp now. So much
it's
so
that been you, sharp.
Sure, absolutely.
That's the way, being hard of hearing, that's something that I cultivated my entire life. Same with lip reading. You know, that's been something I used to get in trouble with since I was young. I used to like charge people 25 cents so I could tell them what they were getting for Christmas while I was lip reading from across the room and listening, quote unquote, into their parents' conversations.
That's awesome training. That's a little hidden secrets. When people ask, like, how did you do this? You're like, hard work and this and they're like, all right, no, I used to sit back and give this quarter out and they would talk and I would, that's how we're trained. That's how they break it down. They bring experts in and like, hey man, if I was somewhere, I used to think when they say the grave with no sound, when I would stick me underwater, when they would pull me underwater, it pulled all my hearing away from me. All I could hear is vibrations and tones. And we were under there so long that my partner, my swim buddy, I could literally understand what he was doing just by the way he grunted at me.
Yeah.
Right? So as when you're growing up,
you adapt.
Yeah, you adapt. Yeah, absolutely. One thing picks up for the other. So when I couldn't even imagine how hard that is. And each one of those tests, he was like, I couldn't even believe I was going to do this. And I was going to do that. But after a while, you seem like they're always hard steps, but you're the only one hard enough to be in there. And if it wasn't that way, there'd be somebody else doing what you're doing. There has to be an apex, like a pinnacle that somebody kind of looks to like, hey, if you got this one, check it out. I don't care what you think. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I know people who are so much better than me. It makes me look like a child, you know, like it's all on a relative scale, you know, of what you're trying to accomplish. All I know is that I work extremely hard and I work harder than a lot of people do probably at the things that I work on. And so that's the only thing I really can control is how hard I work.
After your surgery, is it because of your equilibrium that you have to learn how to walk again?
No, I had surgeries on my knees. So I had dislocated my leg at the knee when I was a senior in high school. And so I've had a full dislocation. So ACL, PCL, MCL, and LCL.
Just hooked
replacements,
it up.
The meniscus. The only thing that's actually mine is my kneecap. And I kept having problems with dislocating and ripping through the ligaments. So I kept having to do surgeries again. And so, you know, when you've done that big of a damage, you know, and you're in a wheelchair and then you don't use your leg for such a long time, all of the muscles atrophy, and then you have to learn how to walk with the assistance of a walker, and then you go from using a walker to freestanding and free walking on your own, which is the scariest thing. It's weird because when you're a kid, when you're like a baby and you're taking your first steps, you're like, you fall over, you're not even afraid. Like as an adult, you know that you're going to hurt yourself, you know? So you're like, you're aware how scary it is. But you know, just having to do it again and again and again, all of the physical therapy and all of the work and being stuck back in a wheelchair, then another surgery, then a walker, then walking, then back in a wheelchair, then a walker, then walking, then back in a wheelchair. It was draining to say the least, but you know, it was a part of the time and gave me a lot of humility, you know, and a lot of love from my mom, you know, boy, she really dealt with a lot, you know. It's a beautiful thing to be able to have parents who actually are supportive and caring. And I'm very aware that that is not normal for a lot of people.
How do you handle that ongoing defeat feeling? Because I feel like that's in the world of our audience and, you know, the Team Never Quit, you know, community. Yeah. They experience that maybe once or twice in their life where it feels like they're just feeling defeated. And that's an experience that you might have to pursue on a daily basis.
Yeah. You know, at some point I was very numb, and that's a very dangerous game to be in, you know, when you just shut it off because you're trying to protect yourself, but in the end you're actually doing far more damage. So I got to a point where I was so manic and so lethargic that I had trouble getting out of my bed to pee. And I remember days when I knew what the steps were. I knew how many steps it would take for me to actually go to take a shower and how overwhelming and long and too far that was. It was just too far. And then making little victories, I made point to find one thing about myself on a daily basis that I liked or that I didn't hate even. And sometimes it was something so arbitrary as like one piece of hair, this curl on my hair I like today. And then the next day having to pick something else, and you run out of freckles and you run out of stupid things. And then you actually start thinking about yourself and having to pick actual attributes of who you are. But I was encouraged out of it, I think. The biggest difference between having to pick yourself back up after you've fallen apart, the difference is that I had people to lend me hope. And every time I've fallen apart, just like you were talking about getting stronger and being kind of pushed, you've learned something. Every time you get back up off the floor, you know that you've done it once. So it makes it easier to get up again. You're like, all right, I'm broken. I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to mourn the loss of who I was and express myself in this moment and be upset and say that that's a valid feeling, because everybody keeps telling you, you know, just smile through it. That's not reality. Sometimes you need to cry and you need to be upset at the struggle that you're in so that you can really move on without resentment. I got up once. I'll get up again. Let's go.
So you do that so many times throughout life.
Yeah, at this point, I actually get excited about it. I was like, all right,
right?
I'm going to learn so much stuff today.
I know, that's my point. I was like, I would get the back surgeries. When you were talking about the wheelchair and the bed and the down, there's a lot of in-between and all that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like that's
there's
the
a lot of bedpans.
It's just when you're sitting there, someone else is having to take care of you. With us, like what was my buddies, we would kidnap each other out of the hospital, and which always wasn't a good idea, but we'd have so much fun with, this is how we kind of come at it as well. I mean, whoever's going through it is miserable. They just are. It's just miserable. But when the people around you are having fun with you in your misery, I know this sounds weird, but then you see the comedy in it and it's like, 'cause you know, you're getting better. Like, you never get battle weakened. You just get battle hardened. If we've been knocked down, the bones out of us laying there, world taken from you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real thing. right?
Some of it's different, but the journey is different for everybody. And some people just don't bounce back up. You know, some people, it's either that they don't have the support system, they don't have the encouragement around them, or they don't make the conscious decision to try. And that's why it's so incredibly important for those of us who have gotten back up to be able to be a force to remind people that getting up is an option, and to show them that every time we get back up, we are stronger. And it's going to take time, and it's hard, and it's messy, and it sucks. But at the same time, it's amazing and beautiful.
Oh, right?
I would not take back losing my hearing. I would not take back all of the surgeries or all of the pain or all of the frustration or having my mom have to bathe me or having to pee in a bucket. Like, I would not take back any of these horrible things. That's what it felt like, horrible things that have happened to me, because they have changed me so much for the better.
It's like, sometimes you forget we work so hard trying to take care of everybody else that we hurt ourselves and we damage ourselves, and you're laying there busted up. And that's kind of the point to where I had to look at it like detention on purpose, so they could take care of me for a second, to remind me how wonderful it was to have it, to have those kind of around me. And then those are the ones you get the most upset. It's funny, right? When you're healing and you're busted up, those that are around you trying to help you get better, those are the ones you yell at the most. I think it's a special kind of treat, a special gift you have to deal with some of us when we're going through that. It absolutely is. And, Isn't that crazy? Like, they're the ones you come down on hardest. I mean, that'll let you know how strong they are, right? And as that one thing sharpens and tempers the other, as we go through it, you realize, like, if someone will come up and be like, oh, it's just one more thing. No, it's just the way it is. This is our path. We have to carry it. I wouldn't want somebody else to, because I don't think they train as hard as I did. You know, you get to where you're working, we go through so much stuff, and you're like, hey, I actually love my burden because I learned how to get good at it. I learned how to carry it. So it's not a burden anymore, man. I put that sucker on. Right? I not only put it on, I will wear it and let everyone else see it. Just think, if you could hear your voice, we probably couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what a great gift that is.
And I think that at some point it doesn't really matter. I think I think more people are encouraged by the fact that you got back up off the floor than they really ever are about the accomplishments of what you've done afterwards, because the getting up and starting over is the hardest part. And being a person to be a living example that failure is real and that you have the ability to move past it is the biggest encouragement that you can be.
So is that why we all have to go through something, so somebody else will have something to look at?
Because I don't think that it's necessarily that you have to go through something. I think that's part of the human experience. This is a messy, broken world full of messy, broken people. And that's just life.
My point exactly.
It's going to be hard. I don't think that it's necessarily like, you know what? Mandy really needs to suffer today. Here, bam. I think it's more, this is a broken world and we are doing our best to navigate through it. And in that, we need to find grace through how we live through our lives.
That's a great way to say that. We came into this broken world and we're having to put it back together. And as we put it back together, we get broken. We get beat up. Yeah. And that way we put ourselves back together.
It's all part of it.
Yeah, it has to be, right? You get to the point where we kind of experience a lot of things over and over again. Like you'll run into people, you're part of this team. Team Never Quit. That's why we name it that. I mean, there's some of us down here just always getting into it.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? It's like we get good at something, you could be comfortable there. Then the next thing we go into, we think is just as hard as the last thing. And we wouldn't want to do it again, but yeah, we would. We're going to, right? We'll keep going at it. And that just kind of, it shows everybody else in any capacity, if they're going through something, that so all of us have to, right? Just to make a move. We all come in, you get knocked down, man, you came in on your back. You couldn't even stand up. And I had buddies that their legs, they were laid up so long and they had atrophied. And they told me that it's like being born again, but you got your old mind. You got to get your body catching back up. You got to light that stuff, the muscles back up. And it takes a little bit of time. And then you get back up on step.
And takes a little bit of a lot of time, man.
Right?
I tell you what, right? After all those surgeries I had, my leg was atrophied for so many years. Like I don't even want to tell you how many years that took just to have a semblance of not a concaved leg. That was just I remember the first day I had like a baby bump of actually just not dipping the wrong direction. And I was just like, oh, it's happening, guys. It's happening. No, but I think it is an amazing thing to note that because of our differences, we really just don't know where people are. Because, you know, it's just like you might have a physical pain. And then we're just shocked and shaken that these people who have millions and millions of dollars, who live in these beautiful houses and they have these beautiful jobs and they have all of these beautiful kids, and then they're completely devastated on the inside, and then they kill themselves because they're completely empty. You know, like, and we're just shocked by like, why? He had everything. What is everything? We woke up this morning. That is a gift. Yeah. We have everything.
They probably had everything that everybody else wanted them to have. That's why they weren't happy.
But I mean, nothing they needed.
Yeah, nothing they needed. Exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's how that works. You can get caught into that, or you can realize that you live your life for yourself and everyone's happy with it. And that's the blessing when they look at that. Like, man, I don't have that. That's a gift. and trust me, there are some things. I tell you this all the time. And people are like, hey, you've been granted a great gift. I'm like, you can give a gift back, right? I was like, I don't know if I'd look at it like.
I'm going to re-gift,
yeah,
man.
I'm going to re-gift. Can I re-gift this?
White elephant.
Right? So when you're kind of sitting there thinking about it like that, like, well, more of a gift, or it's my task. It's what I had to deal with. It's my weight to carry down here to contribute. And in the beginning, man, you just think you're so weak. But the strongest things down here in the beginning get put in the hardest situations to grow them. Like the kind of mustard seed deal of it grows. It starts from nothing. But the more pressure you put on it, the bigger it grows. And that's the same way with kids. I mean, Melly and I have the kids, and we raising them things up. They're tough.
Them things.
Them suckers, man.
Kids will suck the life right out of you.
Suck the life right out of you, man.
I'm one of four, so, you know, I think we did a good job.
Well, yeah, they did. Your parents did a great job.
No, I mean, I was sucking the life out of them. You know, there's four of us. It's always difficult. Sure. Yeah, one for each hand. That's what they said. But, you know, when there's only one parent, then we outnumber you, buddy. Let's go.
Yeah.
Does everyone in your family sing?
No. My older sister, Katie, is a graphic designer and just a brilliant artist. And my younger sister, Sam, is an educator. She's got her degree for special education. And then my younger brother, Josh, works in, I think, security something or other. I don't know. He does something, and I'm really horrible keeping up with him as far as his like work stuff. But he plays guitar and does sing a bit, but nothing. I'm the only one in the family who does anything quasi-professional or consistent.
What about your parents?
My mom was a teacher, so she worked as a middle school teacher. She did science and then later computer and math. And now she works for a rheumatologist office in Colorado doing billing and coding. And my dad worked for a church for a long time, and he wrote curriculum, and then he became a college professor. And so a lot of education for both of them. A lot of education, which is amazing. If I can take like 2 seconds just to
take all the time you want
to glorify my dad for a second, you know, if we're talking about changing your future and becoming a stronger person, my dad came from trailer trash. That's what people would say. He's the only person in his family to have graduated high school. While in high school, you know, I think my one uncle might have gotten a GED now, but he ended up going to college, and he was the first person in his family tree to have gone to college. And he was highly encouraged that he was incredibly stupid and that was a dumb thing for him to even think was possible. And he had people in his life who believed in him so much, they helped him find ways to pay for his education. And he worked jobs and put himself through. And now my dad has like two bachelor's, two master's, wow, and basically two doctorate degrees, and does multiple languages, you know? So it's like he came from an entire surrounding of not good enough into proving that he was himself. And I think that that is instilled in me a lot of, you just don't know me yet. You know, whenever people say that you can't do this, or this is impossible, watch me.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just something I was born and raised with.
That's incredible. And it's so important too. I mean, anybody can be anything if they just work for it. And I think support system is a huge role. If you have just one person that believes in you, that can push you, it's everything. Yeah. Doesn't matter what you came from. It's what you've got inside.
So who was the hardest on you, your mom or your dad?
My mom, but for different reasons. And I guess not really like hard on me is hard, you know, because I was always pretty soft. Like I was the kind of kid that if you looked at disappointed, it would snap my soul in half, you know? So I wasn't really a troublemaker that needed a lot of discipline to really get the point driven home. I was very aware, like overly aware of people. And I think that's lended me quite well, especially with my circumstances now. I've always been very conscious of people and their emotions. And it's something that I never really had to have driven into me. But my mom is, she thinks differently. And she would be the hardest one. But I mean, I'm so close with both of them and I love them both. And I appreciate my mom's transparency now. I didn't always appreciate it when I was younger because it always felt rude, but that's the way my mom's brain works, and she doesn't have the ability to say things differently. She says what she's thinking, and she doesn't have the ability to necessarily soften it. That's just the way her head is.
I had a quick question for you. So you said you lost complete hearing at 18. Mm-hmm. Was there a turnoff? Were you so well trained, and by the time you got to that, was it, what was that? Do you remember that? I'm sure you.
I remember it. I remember it.
I obviously know you remember.
I had that
planned out differently in my head.
Do you remember that? I don't know. It's all blurred. I think it actually started happening more my senior year of high school with all the surgeries. My body had a very adverse reaction to all the medication and the stress and the hormones of being 18. And so initially when I was first losing my hearing, I didn't hardly notice because I was at home by myself in a room by myself doing nothing, you know? So it's like, there's really not much for you to listen to. You're just kind of stuck in a CPM machine and just hanging out. But also I was so good at lip reading that some of those like casual conversations, you don't really realize how much you are adapting, and how much you're relying on lip reading to support what you can or can't hear. And then when I went to school, it became very painfully obvious, and I was losing hearing in such large chunks, like 40 decibels a month, that it was a situation where I had a journal. I had two journals, one of things I could still hear and one of things that I couldn't hear anymore, and a detail of what they sounded like. So to try to remember. And at some point, you know, like every morning you'd wake up and then you'd look at the list of things that you could hear, and then you have to cross one off and move it to the other book. So it was a very painful, real process that lasted about 9 months. So it wasn't just like I woke up one morning and I was just like, well, this is different. It was 9 months of being very aware of everything that was going away as it was going away. So it felt a little bit like, you know, like you were tearing off my fingernails in front of me. I was watching you do it and I knew which nail.
So I got a question. when you mm-hmm. when you're losing, when that's going away, see if I say this right, were you so focused on what you were losing, was there anything else coming in that you were picking up, something new, like a skill set that you have now as they took one away? Sometimes I think we can get so focused on what we're losing, you don't see what's coming in on you, the new skill set you're going to have, because if you lost one, something else had to be heightened.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, not really. I mean, I was kind of enveloped with having to figure out a world around me. I've never really thought that you necessarily just like gain a lot of different skills. I think that you just work on them and so they improve. You know, my ability to feel and to understand the world around me by the vibrations and the touch and to be able to pay attention to that stuff is stuff that you having hearing can do. You just don't, because you don't have to. I think that that's skill sets that are developed, not necessarily just handed to you. And I actively participated in gaining those skills. You know, I was stuck in a world that I didn't have means of waking up in the morning with an alarm clock that I couldn't have to just rely on feeling. You know, I had to get a vibrating alarm clock and then feeling safe in my house, you know, because I couldn't actually hear the door close, or being afraid that somebody was coming up behind me because I couldn't see them coming and I would never hear them coming, or being afraid of dying in my apartment because my apartment caught on fire and I couldn't hear the alarm. You know, like there are so many things that I was actively trying to navigate through that at the time there was too much going on for me to even care that I was improving other skill sets. That took me, I had to navigate the brokenness first before I could appreciate the blessings in it.
Do you still have those journals?
I have chunks of them in different places. I've got one somewhere in the box over there. They're the one that was the book that had all the sounds that I could hear. When I finally crossed out everything on the list, I had a celebratory burning of it and danced around it with a passion and had a full day. I don't think you're supposed to light things on fire inside of a dorm room, and I don't think anybody actually knew that I did it, but it was a wicked awesome experience.
Sure you are. Whoever told you that was... That's not the truth. That's exactly.
Yeah, don't light things on fire, kids.
It was
a moment. But I definitely have journals from when I was there.
I keep journals too every day. And what is funny, like, you're not supposed to burn stuff. I remember when I transitioned from being when I started SEAL training, everything mm-hmm. that I had taken in before that, we burned it, and all you mm-hmm. had was what was left. And it was kind of it was like, hey, that the past is the past. We're in this right now. There's no looking back. I was like, everything that we had to go through was designed for a reason in the hardest way. And I look back on the stuff that I had written down before, kind of with hard times, but looking back, how beneficial it was for me for something to be taken away, or I had to go through this because it granted me this. And we say age is rank because you can't get ahead of it. You're stuck in it. Right. So as you go through each age, especially if you have siblings or close friends, you can learn something that they're older that they're going through, but we still have to go through it. You kind of have a contemplation of what's going to happen. But the best part about life is that we get in there and have to go at it. And I was so amazed by the fact you say you feel the vibrations through your feet, right? When you play.
I feel it through everything. I use the floor and my feet to keep in time rhythmically with the drums or the bass. But I kind of designate different body parts for different instruments at this point. But yeah.
And they don't run any sensors over to your feet or anything like that. It's just you standing there, right?
No, if they added more vibration to it, I think I might throw up. Like it's so already
too much.
You can feel
that so much when that's going down. When all that stuff's close to you and those vibrations are going off, you can feel that vibrating up, and that tells you.
Yeah, that's amazing, I'm the first person when we're sitting down at a restaurant to actually feel the beat of the song that's playing in the background that people can't hear because they're too focused on all the people talking, you know. But I can feel the pulsing of it on the table. Of where we are in the restaurant. I'm like, this song's bouncy. And they're like, what song? Oh yeah, there is song playing.
You know, like you just kind of get used to patterns, I think. But maybe that's that partially, you know, I'm on the spectrum a little. So it's maybe I just pick up on patterns too easily. I don't know.
So if you caught, do you know what direction it's coming from too?
No.
Okay.
No, not always. I mean, sometimes you'll like something will drop on the floor and you can feel that it's on the floor.
That's what I'm talking about.
Or you feel the vibration through the floor, but actually it was on a countertop somewhere, but it traveled through into the floor. So really you typically just tend to look at the area of your body that felt the vibration and then just kind of look around to see if you can figure out the source. I have yet to become Yoda-like to be able to say, all right, that came from 12 paces to the left. But you never know. Maybe one day that would be wicked awesome.
I mean, sitting there with your eyes closed when you play and you can feel that. Can you feel somebody tapping their foot under the table? So you would know that they were nervous.
That's just super annoying, yes.
Right, so if you're sitting around somewhere and there's underneath, everyone's at the table, you can feel that. If someone's tapping their foot violently, that's nerves.
Even violently. They can be touching, like tapping it very gently at this point. Like, yeah. I mean, it's an extreme sensitivity that I've developed. You know, I did it intentionally because I wanted to be able to understand the world around me very, you know, as colorfully as I could. However, you know, like in my office, in my room, just around the corner, I have like a swinging chair so that my feet and my whole body get off of being on the floor, you know, just so that I can give myself breaks from having to feel things as much, you know, cause I get so sensitive to it now. You just feel like you're in a washing machine. You're just like, geez, please just stop moving.
So could you teach someone who still had their hearing to have that skill set? Or would you have to take that from them?
No, everybody can do this. You know, like I started with balloons. You know, if you blow up a balloon and you hold a balloon on your fingertips and you have a stereo and you're playing music or even talking into it, you can feel yourself talking. You can feel the music amplified on your fingertips holding onto this balloon. You'll feel it in an intense sort of way. And that, you know, building up your sensitivity on your fingertips is kind of like where you start. And I show kids how to do this and adults how to do this all the time. But, you know, just like anybody can buy a balloon.
So what are you doing now?
I'm working on an album. So, I mean, I'm doing a lot of different things.
Are you teaching?
I do a lot of workshops. I do a lot of speaking or keynote speeches. I perform a lot. I've been doing a lot of virtual concerts or making videos and posting them on my Patreon account. Hopefully when the world opens up a little bit, I can go back on the road and tour. I was touring a lot, and that would include visiting a lot of schools and doing concerts in the evening. But during the day, I'd actually visit a lot of schools and talk to kids around the country and around the world about embracing failure and about chasing your dreams and understanding that you can modify your dream. Just general encouragement. But in addition to that, you know, I'm working on writing. I wrote a children's book over quarantine. I did, you know, lots of things. I like to do a lot of things, and I'm excited to see what kind of mischief I'm going to get into this year.
A children's book. You need to write a book to go into the special forces. And literally that skill set that you have, because of what I learned how to do, is sitting there, laying there, watching and how people react. And then the vibrations and to pick that up, people can't even believe that.
Well, we should, I could do a workshop for them.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, right. I mean, like the nitinoid stuff that you thought was just not important, like the balloon or what I had to do here. I mean, like with guys like me, we like it when you break it down. Like it was simple. I mean, make it just tell me if I had to have a balloon and then hold some foil and stick my other foot. I mean, you just tell me to do that, right? And it teaches us things that normally in our trade craft we wouldn't be gifted to have.
Sure.
That's a real thing.
I'd start with a balloon though. You don't have to really do anything else.
All right, I'm gonna go out there.
Hold a balloon. You can talk into it, have somebody else talk into it, or play from the stereo and
hold on to your fingertips. But past that, you know, like all of this is a development through time.
Sure.
You know, it's, I think people forget that it's been over a decade for me and over a decade of working 10 to 16, 18 hours a day, you know, it's a lot of time.
What was the culmination on all that? Was when you went out and performed Try for the first time?
I mean, the start of the work?
No. When you, sure. Absolutely. I'm talking about like when you were up there. I mean, no one has any idea how hard it was to go through that, to sing that song up there, to get that. But when you sing that song, it makes me want to try. I mean, you can like feel that.
Did you see the part? You see the part though, when I start giggling, when people start standing up and scream. So do you want to know why I giggled though?
Please.
Cause I didn't think it was cool. You know, I wasn't laughing cause I was like, look at them. They're cheering me on. In my mind, I was just like, you guys are ruining this for me because they're like making all this noise. It's shaking the stage and I couldn't feel the band anymore. So I laughed because in my head, I was like, I just went rogue. You know, I was just like, ah, they'll follow me. Like I'm free birding it now. So
that's what happened.
Cause yeah, we that's were what screaming. Happened. It was I a mean, giggle when you of do fear. That,
when you started laughing, we thought, I literally thought you could hear me. Through my TV, because I was like, "Oh man, did you hear
no,
that?"
No, I was giggling because I was just like, "Shut up, no, guys! You're perfect. Making this hard."
Yeah, it's perfect. It was perfect.
We showed one of Marcus's friends yesterday. He had a friend visiting that is huge guy. I mean, big burly firefighter, and he was asking who was going to be on the podcast today, and we pulled it up on YouTube, and he just starts bawling, and he's like, "Don't show me."
You believe that? Oh, like everybody no. always looks at us and they're like, yeah. You gotta listen to that hard, heavy stuff. And this guy's like, I do. Like yeah. If I have to go fight or whatever, I'll listen to that. But if I'm just sitting there trying to relax and something, that's what we listen to.
Uh-huh. So after you were on that show, did things blow up for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. Like, I mean, I'd never really seen the show before, so I didn't know what a golden buzzer was or what that meant. And you have to understand that this was filmed, like the auditions is one of the parts that's filmed and it's not live. So I filmed the first day of filming that was back in April and my episode actually aired as the second episode, even though it was the first day of filming, in June, D-Day, June 6th.
Oh, wow.
And, I had 2 months to hold a secret of something. I had no idea what it meant. And then when it happened, when D-Day happened, you know, even if you get a golden buzzer, it doesn't necessarily go viral that way. Like that video has been seen collectively over 500 million times. And it was a part of a lot of different movements and a lot of change. You know, there were so many ASL programs that started and schools accepting sign language as a foreign language. There was a massive vote in Brazil to allow people with disabilities to be a part of the mainstream school system. That was already in the works, but because of the timing of it, I got to be peppered. That my little picture with me and my ukulele was peppered all over Brazil. And I was one more example of a person who was different being successful, and it passed. So, you know, like we got to be a part of something bigger than just being on a TV show. And even on that TV show, I brought closed captions to the green room for the first time. There's a video before the song Release Me, which is the longest period of silence on network television history. And it's not negative. We brought sign language with music for the first time. My interpreter was shown front and center because there's nothing wrong with needing help or having to have tools to be successful. You know, like if there was a drop in the bucket of success, I would say that was a massive one. And afterwards, I've been doing everything that I could just to continue just to be an encouragement. And so I don't know what that looks like for other people as far as like, I haven't won a Grammy yet, but you know, my version of success is, did I make somebody smile this morning? Did I help them see value in themselves? Because that's what I'm aiming for on a daily basis.
We made us smile. We love your song. And
thank you.
I mean,
it's so funny how
everyone that we share it with,
when it's where you brought up. Because mm-hmm. in our world, we learn sign language so we can be quiet. It's a special skill set. It's part of being special forces. All of our signals and codes and everything. And then some people, it's all how you, it is a foreign language, but it is a special language. And when people who speak it, and when you have that, it's kind of funny because some of us work so hard just to get that into that ability. Isn't that funny? Granted, with everything else, but we in our community, we work so hard to get into the ability where we don't use our voice. We're quiet, you know, all that.
Yeah.
It's like I started hearing more when you start listening to other people talk. And they teach you so much because there's a difference between sitting and waiting to talk and sitting to wait and listening. So, yeah. You know, when someone has the voice, when the confidence that had to come with everything that you got, I couldn't even, that was something, literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, coming from what I do on our side, I was just thoroughly impressed.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for doing that.
I also work very, very hard, and I have tools. You know, like even this whole conversation. You know, I've got captions on my side helping me out here. You know, so it's just like you do what you got to do to be successful, and sometimes that means you got to be innovative.
So I was wondering that because I have a Texas accent, and it gets worse as I get more excited. So I bet some of that stuff coming across that screen, like, I don't even know what they're saying.
Just but the whole alphabet.
We would have never known.
I was wondering if some of Marcus's words were coming out wrong because his accent is so thick.
I think it's pretty bad.
It's doing pretty well. I mean, like, when you were starting to talk about knives and sharpening stuff, it got really kind of muddled. But I knew the general idea.
It's muddled over here, too.
Okay.
All right. It'll make sense to somebody. Probably just me and one other dude, but they probably needed to hear it. All right. That's when you start to.
I feel like that's a skill set in itself. You know? It's like you read captions all day long, and every time it does certain things wrong, but you know what it's supposed to be because you see it wrong all the time. You're just like, oh, yeah, it's this word. You know, it failed on that one again, you know?
I don't know if a lot of people pay attention when we watch the news. I read a lot on the bottom.
You got to be careful with the ones, because the news is live. And so sometimes, like, it's really, 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 really late at night or really, 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 really early in the morning, if you get like a captioner who's quitting, they'll talk to you.
Really?
It's the creepiest thing. I've seen it twice in my life, though. I've seen it twice. And I watch captions every day. But like 3 o'clock in the morning, there was one day I was watching a show and the captioner was like, hey, you. I see you. And I was like,
isn't that funny? That's awesome.
And they're just like, just kidding, captioner, blah, 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 signing off, peace. And I was just like, okay, what the heck was that?
Awesome. It's that little titches. And I started doing that because I was reading one caption and there was a word that was, the sentence was perfect, but the word in there, if you had read the sentence, it meant something completely different.
Yeah.
And I was like, wonder if that, how often that happens. So I started paying attention. And then, you know, you can see that cool stuff. That's spice of life right there, man. Just those little
nuggets.
Nuggets, yeah, that show up.
Yeah. I like watching movies with captions on it, though, because it always gives you information that you can't audibly hear anyway. So, like, sometimes if, like, you're watching, like, a thriller and the person's on the phone, they're like, yes, uh-huh. Like, you can't actually hear what's on the phone, but half the time it's captioned because it's scripted somewhere.
Yeah.
And so you get this information that you can't audibly hear, or footsteps ascending down hallway. And you're like, before you can actually hear the footsteps, because the sound hasn't actually kicked in yet for people who can hear. However, I will say, after losing my hearing, one of the things that really did disappear is the fear factor when it came to like scary movies, because a lot of the fear is in the sound, boy. But I watched The Ring. I have never laughed so hard in my life. Oh my gosh, that thing I was dying.
Okay, there's an absolute reason. We'll wind this up, but there's an absolute reason you said that to me. And I was wondering this. So I was watching one of the Avenger movies. Mm. Or one of the X-Men movies. If you're watching it, because I didn't have the sound on, and I was just kind of watching it play out, and it was completely different because I knew the lines from the movie. I'd seen it so many times, I knew the lines, but when I was watching it without the sound and watching what was going down, it didn't match up at all. And that happens, right? That's, you can pick that up.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's more,
I guess I don't know what if the it ring would be was any a
comedy,
other way.
Well, yeah, if the ring is a comedy, because I was listening to it.
Oh, it's hilarious.
See, that's my point.
Yeah, like some of that stuff just doesn't transfer well, you know, without like the sound. Like there's one, Guardians of the Galaxy has so much music in it and so much like ties to the mood connected with the music that's playing in the background.
Yes, that's the best
way to say it. It's not there. That. It just says groove, you know, and just like, all right. But he's like dancing to nothing. And so you're just like, all right.
Cool, dude.
That's what I'm talking about. That, yes.
Get on with your bad self.
Yeah, go ahead. Get some.
Yeah.
How can our fans support you and what you have going on?
Aww. Well, I just have a new single come out called Masterpiece. So if they want to help support me, they can always take a listen or purchase it from wherever you purchase your music from. You can also find my music and find merch or what I'm up to on mandyharveymusic.com or follow me on my social medias. So, which is generally just Mandy Harvey or Mandy Harvey Music.
And do you want to plug your Patreon account?
Yeah, why not? I have a Patreon account. Every Friday, I post a mini concert that's captioned and my thoughts of the day. And I did it because there were so many concerts and things that were coming out, but there was no accessibility for those who needed the captions. So I actually take the time and I personally caption the videos myself so that even though it's just me, I do a lot of covers by request or music that I've written. It's painstakingly captioned just for you.
Oh, I love
That's
it.
That's so awesome.
Thank you for telling your story and for coming on here. I know that our listeners will just love your attitude on life and your outlook, and we love it, and you inspire us.
I've had the best time. Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. Happy to be here. Hopefully we get to do this again.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Have a great day.
Bye, guys.
Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of the awesome Team Never Quit podcast. We're super excited that you come back every single week to support us. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, wherever you get your podcasts. We've got some brand new gear in the store, shop.teamneverquit. We've got some sweet new leather patch hats that are incredible. You guys should certainly check those out. And make sure you're following us on Patreon. That's where we get exclusive access to the show. We've got bonus content. We do some live streaming. We've got some sweet merchandise that's only for our Patreon members. If you want to join that community, it's patreon.com/teamneverquit. And really just a big shout out to our Patreons. You guys are who allow us to put this show on every single week. Your support means the world to us. Hey, we love you guys. We'll see you next week.